Ladies and gentlemen, the captain has turned on the fasten seatbelt sign. If you haven't already done so, please make sure the volume of this podcast is set perfectly to your listening enjoyment. Please take your seat, whether that's on the treadmill, car, sofa, or bed, and buckle in for the last trip. My name is Jamie Beebe, and I'll be your tour guide, recreating someone's last days in paradise. On behalf of myself and everyone behind the scenes, please enjoy the Last Trip podcast. And because nobody likes a long flight to get to where they want to be, let's prepare for takeoff. Carla Valpaez was 35 years old when she left Michigan with a friend to attend a wedding and explore Peru. After the wedding, wanting to do some solo exploring, she split with her friend to Machu Picchu and the Sacred Valley. But tragically, she was last seen in the morning of December 12, 2018, on surveillance video in the village of Pisac, heading towards Sacred Valley. This trip was important to Carla because she was losing her sight and would soon be blind. She wanted to see the world before that happened. What happened to Carla Valpaez? Did her vision impairment make her a target for criminals, or was there an accident? We talked a little bit about Peru in episode 7, the case of Jesse Galganov, who was backpacking through Peru and went missing along the Santa Cruz Trek. While they both spent time in Lima, they ultimately vanished in very different parts of the country. After Lima, Carla traveled to Cusco, then visited Machu Picchu and the Sacred Valley. And the first step, once you reach Cusco, is to figure out how to get to Machu Picchu from there, because it can be somewhat confusing working out the logistics. You can get there by train, which is the easiest and most popular mode of transportation. You take it directly from Poroy, just outside of Cusco, to Aguas Calientes. It's offered by both Peru Rail and Inca Rail, and takes about 4 hours each way. Another option is the bimodal service. It combines a private bus transfer from Cusco to Ollantaytambo train station with a train ticket from Ollantaytambo to Aguas Calientes. The main advantage of the bimodal service is that it offers the option to spend a couple hours exploring the town of Ollantaytambo, depending on the length of your layover, and can sometimes be a little cheaper. Or you can find your own way, like a taxi or public bus from Cusco to Ollantaytambo, and then jump on the train to Aguas Calientes, again letting you explore a little bit more. The least fun option is to take a car to the town of Hidroeléctrica, a 6-hour drive from Cusco and the last town accessible by road before Machu Picchu. You then have to walk along the train tracks for 2 hours to reach Aguas Calientes. And lastly, there are several hikes you can take along the Inca Trail, the Salcante Trek, or the Laras Trek. The hikes take several days. You should hire a guide or go with a group to be on the safe side. And you often have to book pretty far in advance. I would definitely do the hike to get the most out of my trip, and I love being in nature and camping, so it's perfect for me. By all accounts, it looks like Carla took the train from Poroy to Aguas Calientes, the most direct train route. Once you arrive at Machu Picchu, you can either hire a guide outside the gates or book one in Aguas Calientes. Machu Picchu is one of the most extraordinary places to visit on the planet, so it's no wonder that it was on Carla's bucket list before she fully lost her sight. The Peruvian Minister of Culture requires all travelers to get an official permit to visit Machu Picchu, and crowds are limited to 2,500 people each day. Permits do need to be booked in advance to secure a place and get a good entry time. The first entry time is at 6 a.m., and there are hourly slots up to 2 p.m. Permits allow for 4 hours of exploring Machu Picchu, but you should note that all visitors must be out by 5:30 p.m., so you won't be seeing the sunset from Machu Picchu. A few highlights in Machu Picchu include the Intihuatana Stone, which is a carved pillar on a square stone base. The name translates to the hitching posts of the sun. The corners point to the 4 cardinal points, and the stone still accurately indicates the positioning of the sun. If you happen to be watching at noon on either equinox, you'll notice the stone's shadow disappear for just a moment, exactly how it was designed by the Incas. The royal tomb is a cave-like building that's thought to be where sacrificial or burial rituals were performed. And there have been more than 100 skeletons excavated there. Just to the left of the tomb lies a series of ceremonial baths fed by a sophisticated aqueduct system, because the Incas had some very impressive masonry skills. And climbing the Huayna Picchu is a must-do so you can see Machu Picchu from above. This has to be booked well in advance as part of your admission ticket and takes about an hour to reach the top, but well worth it for the view. And one last fun fact about Machu Picchu is that you can get your passport stamped at the entrance. After leaving Machu Picchu, Carla went back to Cusco with a tour group she met and they partied the night away dancing and drinking. Cusco is quite famous in Peru for the nightlife and it's packed just about every night of the week. Most of the nightclubs in town start late and stay open till the early morning hours. Just remember that you get drunk easier in higher altitudes, so drink responsibly. The last place Carla was seen was the charming little village of Pisac, located at the entrance of the Sacred Valley. It's about 20 miles northeast of Cusco along the Urubamba River and surrounded by towering mountains and lush valleys. A lot of people go to Pisac to participate in their medicinal ceremonies. There are a few different kinds, but the most popular is ayahuasca. Now, I haven't totally made my mind up about these ayahuasca retreats because while I love experiencing new things, I don't do drugs and there are some really negative aspects to it. Ayahuasca ceremonies are usually guided by experienced shamans or healers and conducted in a ritualistic setting at night and in a natural environment. So this is the perfect area to partake. You drink a hallucinogenic brew and it gives you both visual and auditory hallucinations, an altered perception of time, space, and supposedly profound insights or spiritual experiences. After you drink it, you basically lie down or sit quietly and experience the effects. And most people throw up before the experience actually kicks in. There might be some chanting or singing involved as well. It sounds pretty cool, but there's also a dark side. As the ceremonies have gotten more popular in recent years, so have the criminal elements. Some of the people selling or running the ceremonies are not shamans and don't know what they're doing, and people can get hurt or die. There have been a lot of reports of sexual assaults during these ceremonies as well. My rule of thumb is to never alter my mind with any substances when I'm traveling because staying aware is the best way to stay safe. The town of Pisac is known for the markets and shopping, easily some of the best in Peru. The market is officially held every Tuesday, Thursday, and Sunday, and it's so popular that it takes over the Plaza de Armas and surrounding streets every day of the week. It's a sight to see, and everything is for sale. Even children walk around selling trinkets or asking for money to take a photo with them. Restaurants sell the Peruvian delicacy of roasted guinea pig if you want to try something new. And it's a great place to buy some coca leaves, which you'll want to chew on to help with the effects of the high altitude. And of course, the Pisac archaeological site in the Sacred Valley, which is where Carla was headed when she vanished, is the main reason people visit the town. It's stunningly beautiful on top of a big hill covering several square kilometers that include agricultural terraces, residential areas, ceremonial plazas, and religious structures. It's less busy than Machu Picchu, making it a bit more serene not to have to run into so many other tourists. The terrain there varies in difficulty level with stairs, walkways, uneven terrain, steep slopes of the hillside, and an elevation of almost 10,000 feet above sea level. Carla was in great shape and it didn't seem like she was bothered by the altitude, but anyone can have an accident and fall, especially someone hiking alone and with a vision impairment. And of course, there are criminals in every corner of the world. Let's dive in and get to know Carla Valpeas. Carla Valpeas was born December 8, 1983 in San Antonio, Texas. Her and her brother Carlos were only 11 months apart, so they were closer than most siblings are. They had the same friends growing up, went to the same schools in Texas, and spent hours tubing down the Guadalupe River talking about their futures. But when she was just 10 years old, Carla found out she had optic nerve atrophy and has been gradually losing her sight ever since. The American Association for Pediatric Ophthalmology said the condition is mild to severe damage to the optic nerve that can adversely affect central vision, peripheral vision, and color vision. And tragically, there is no treatment that can reverse optic nerve atrophy. But rather than slowing her down, her diagnosis just made her work harder and accomplish even more. She was kind and giving, always putting others before herself. If she was your friend, she would do anything for you. She devoted her life to helping other people while simultaneously living hers to the fullest. She went to Texas Tech in 2003, where she studied Arabic as an undergraduate. This led to her first study abroad experience, when her Arabic professor encouraged students to study in Tunisia. Carla jumped at the opportunity and spent a summer there. She loved it, and the experience set off her love of traveling. She studied abroad again for a semester in Spain a year later, and then again for a year in Egypt. Carla was the type of person that would stop at nothing to get what she wanted. When her application for the Peace Corps was unsuccessful, she contacted a friend in Yemen to brainstorm other ideas for an international experience. That's when she went to Yemen to teach English to blind students as a part of a practicum for her master's program in social justice and conflict transformation at SIT Graduate Institute. She became a savvy and independent traveler, visiting over 20 countries by herself, often staying for lengths of time teaching English, trying to fit in as much as she could before her disease stole her vision completely. She went on to complete her graduate work at the School for International Training. By then, she was fluent in English, Spanish, Arabic, and Braille. She worked with Islamic Relief Yemen and organized workshops with an organization that empowered women in the workforce. She also worked in Washington, D.C. with Mary House, an organization that serves Latino immigrants and Iraqi refugees. She was an activist in every sense of the word. After school, she moved to Detroit, Michigan, and started working at the Arab American National Museum. She made it her life mission to help others, giving her time to organizations trying to transition people out of difficult times in Metro Detroit, also spending time working as an English as a second language tutor. Carla's goal was to make a difference in the world. She wrote a book, Visionless Adventures, about how she overcame challenges and obstacles as a blind traveler. She wanted to empower others to overcome whatever was holding them back from their dreams, and advocated for others with disabilities to go abroad because it would help them learn more about themselves and at the same time teach others about them. Her main goal was to see the world before she no longer could. She did everything in her life to prepare for eventually going blind. She was a trailblazer for the visually impaired. A year before she went missing, Carla posted a YouTube video so people could learn more about her life and the work she was doing. She said, "My adventurous spirit challenged me to step out of my comfort zone, giving me the opportunity to live among different cultures and communities. I wanted to create a platform and I want to bridge communities of cultures and carry out workshops so that we can learn to work together." Carla moved to Detroit on her own, but a few months before her trip to Peru, when her mom Maria retired from her job as a victims advocate in Texas, Carla asked her to move in, and she did. Although Carla had a busy schedule, going to the gym, working at the museum, and then teaching English at the community center, she still found time to bike and walk throughout the city and rarely asked for help. But her mom suspected her eyesight was worsening. She was a careful person and understood her limitations, and she didn't put herself into positions that were dangerous, although her vision was now considered, as her brother called it, low vision. When the opportunity to travel to Peru with a friend to attend a wedding came up, she jumped at the chance. The wedding would be fun because she loved to meet people, talk to people, and was great at dancing the night away. Her 35th birthday would fall during the trip, and Machu Picchu was on her bucket list, so it was perfect timing. She would go with her friend for the wedding, and then after, she'd visit the various sites in the area. Carla's trip went as planned until she split from her friend to do that solo exploring, and she was never seen again. Let's go through the timeline in this case after these messages from our sponsors. Carla and her friend Alicia Steele took a bus from Detroit to Chicago, then two flights to get to Lima, Peru on December 2, 2018. The pair spent the first week in Lima attending the wedding and later celebrating Carla's 35th birthday on the beach. After that, Carla planned to go to Machu Picchu and the Sacred Valley on her own and meet back up with Alicia in Lima for the flight home on December 15th. On December 10th, Carla spoke to her mom on the phone, telling her how excited she was to see Machu Picchu, saying, "I'll be thinking about you when I'm there." Carla landed in Cusco on December 11th and headed straight to Machu Picchu. But when she got to the gates, the employees there discouraged her from going in by herself due to her loss of vision and the rugged terrain. Luckily, a tour group nearby heard the conversation and invited her to join them. Carla happily accepted the invitation, and the group of three Spanish travelers and a man from Argentina ascended their tour of Machu Picchu at 8,000 feet above sea level. The group became fast friends, especially because Carla was fluent in Spanish. They talked, got to know each other, and even took photos together. The new friends arrived back in Cusco at around 10 p.m. December 11th, but weren't ready to separate just yet. They had such a great time throughout the day that they ended up going to some hot springs, grabbing a bite to eat, and then going out dancing. The group later told her family that Carla was happy and in good spirits. Nothing was out of the ordinary. They drank and danced all night. Carla finally returned to the Parihuana hostel with another woman she met that day around 4 a.m. She was staying in a dorm-style room with 9 other people. Throughout that day, Alicia didn't hear from Carla and was really worried. She sent numerous texts saying, "Carla, are you there? Carla, I'm so worried and have not heard anything from you. Is everything okay? Please, 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 write me when you can." Carla didn't reply until almost 12 hours later and blamed the lack of Wi-Fi and her packed travel itinerary. But what she said in the text was alarming, writing, "I had a big issue that I need to resolve that I'll do before I get home." She never elaborated on what that issue was, but with her later disappearance, her family and friends were left to wonder. At 11:47, the night of December 11th, Alicia received her last text from Carla about seeing Machu Picchu and meeting up to go home. It said, "I can't wait to tell you all about it. It was absolutely worth it, 100%. I'm coming in on Thursday afternoon, so I will send you the details through email once I check in. It would be a wonderful welcoming to have you come pick me up." Carla was up early the next morning on December 12th, presumably with plans to sightsee and go to the Sacred Valley. By the time the other roommates woke up around 9:30 a.m., Carla was already packed and gone. She left behind two bags with souvenirs, her medicine, and her jacket. She sent a text in Spanish on WhatsApp to the Argentine man from the tour group at 10:02 a.m., saying, "Hi, I wanted to tell you that I'm going on a trip today to check out some places, but I think I'll be back around 1 p.m. and I'll message you to see where you are and maybe we can meet up and see some museums. I hope you got some rest." That was the last text anyone ever received from Carla. At about 9 a.m., she left the hostel in a cab, according to video surveillance. The first cab driver dropped her off at Cusco Street, where people ride share taxis headed to the Sacred Valley. Another taxi picked her up there with a few other tourists, and Carla got off in the valley's first village, which was Pisac. This is the main route people would take if they were headed toward the Sacred Valley. As she was walking, she met a woman selling traditional clothing and an employee of the local tourism information office and asked them for directions to the park, then continuing in the direction they advised. A camera outside a drugstore on Balanisi and Kahlo Street in Pisac captured the last known image of Carla. It showed her walking quickly with her green day pack and silver folding cane, heading in the direction of the Pisac Archaeological Park. A park employee later told police he saw Carla walking toward the entrance, but the park ticket taker couldn't confirm that she went inside. And that's where her trail goes cold. On December 15th, she was supposed to meet Alicia in Lima to get on their return flight to the U.S., but she hadn't heard from Carla in a few days. While she was worried, she thought Carla may have lost her phone and was running late. So Alicia went to the airport thinking they would meet there, but that never happened. When Carla didn't show up, Alicia immediately went to the police and filed a missing persons report, staying in Peru to help in the search for her friend. Carla's father, Carlos, was at home in Comfort, Texas, when he learned Carla was missing and that no one had contact with her for 3 days. He instantly packed a bag with just a few clothes and got on the next flight to Peru with every intention of finding his daughter and bringing her home. But when he arrived, he felt that authorities weren't doing enough to find Carla, so he became that squeaky wheel, going to the police station and searching for her on foot every single day. Carlos left his job as a contractor and moved to Peru with only his backpack and stayed until he was forced to leave in March of 2020 due to the COVID-19 pandemic. He took Carla's flyer door to door asking if anyone had information. He stopped people on the streets, showing them her photo. He did absolutely everything imaginable to find his daughter. Carla's family set up a GoFundMe to support the search and keep her father searching in Peru. Local authorities scoured the area extensively with helicopter, drones, cadaver dogs, sniffing hounds, and professional mountaineers. There was no sign of Carla, no trail to follow, and no clues. After December 12th, Carla's phone was turned off or the battery died, and there was no activity on her credit cards or banking. But on December 21st, Carla's WhatsApp was compromised and her account was deleted from her phone. Guys, that is extremely suspicious. Her family requested the cell phone providers in Peru to attempt to ping her phone's last location, but the companies have not followed through. Carlos eventually found a witness that overheard people from the park on December 12th saying, "La gringuita no ha bajado," which means the American hasn't come down from the mountain. By those accounts, that means she entered the park but never came back out. She was hiking alone and also vision impaired. Hiking alone, regardless of who you are, can be extremely dangerous. One of the people Carla met, Sandy Johnson, wrote on the family's GoFundMe page saying that she traveled with Carla down from the Sun Gate at Machu Picchu and was amazed by her determination, but also worried for her safety. She wrote, "She told me it was difficult because of her perception problem and the steps being so uneven. Also, the coloring of the stones going from white to gray to black. She fell many times, but got herself right up. We were getting close to the bottom, and twice I had to redirect her to the left or she would have gone over a boulder. I stopped talking to her so as not to confuse her. She got to the end safely. I lost her when I stopped to take pictures. Praying you find her well." While it sounds like an accident while hiking is an extremely plausible explanation, it does not explain how her WhatsApp was deleted from her phone a week and a half after she supposedly entered the park, or why her phone was turned off, or why no one saw her in the park. Carla's father was frustrated by the lack of attention her disappearance was getting from authorities in Peru. He said the police in Peru weren't doing a thorough job and didn't care if they found his daughter. But he was also upset that the United States was not helping in the search. The State Department released a statement saying, "We are aware of media reports regarding a U.S. citizen missing in Cusco, Peru. The U.S. Department of State and our embassies and consulates abroad have no greater responsibility than the protection of U.S. citizens overseas. Due to a privacy concern, we have no further comment." But when Carlos went to the U.S. Embassy for additional help, they said they couldn't do anything unless the DAs in Cusco opened a criminal case regarding the disappearance of Carla. And Peru refused to do that because they thought she had an accident in the park. Carlos wouldn't give up. He went to the authorities and fought with the DA every day, day after day. And finally, in October of 2019, they opened a criminal case concerning her disappearance. Soon, the case would move from missing person to foul play to kidnapping and homicide. But still, the FBI wouldn't intervene because they said the only time they'll jump in is if it's a criminal case of an American against an American. Valer Cruces, the man leading the Peruvian police investigation, said that U.S. authorities have not offered local police any specific assistance. So the family used the GoFundMe money they raised to continue their own investigation. They hired additional search and rescue investigative personnel on the ground in Peru, but no one was finding Carla or any clues. Carla's father had to leave the country during the pandemic, but he has not given up. And he's traveled back countless times since then, often with Carla's brother. As the two-year anniversary of Carla's disappearance came and went during the pandemic, her family continued to work every single day on her case. They also started working to bring awareness to the dangers of traveling alone in this region of Peru, meeting with other families in similar situations with missing or murdered loved ones. They started working with Jesse Galganov's mom, as well as Natalie Ayala's family. Two men were arrested in her murder and claimed she died in a zipline accident, and they dumped her body in a river. But her body has never been located. The three families have become close, joining a club that no one wanted to be in, but thankful and grateful to be there for each other. On April 4th, 2021, Peruvian authorities opened a preliminary investigation for the crime of simple homicide against Carla. The break in the case came from a tip that a foreigner, only identified in paperwork as the initials JGL, had information regarding her disappearance and they were looking for him. Unfortunately, they have not been able to locate him. In January 2022, a tip came in on the location of Carla's body as well as naming those involved in her murder. The anonymous caller said that she was buried inside a house near the chapel of the district of Pisac, and the caller had obtained this tip from listening to the conversation of some people in a public place. A search was carried out at the home in question as well as the fields near the chapel, but again, neither Carla nor any clues were found. Finally, in early 2024, the U.S. Embassy said they will now help with the investigation, and Carlos is again on his way to Peru to meet with them. It's been over 5 years since Carla went missing, and her family has not slowed down trying to find her and bring her home. With so few clues to go on, there are several theories about what happened from both authorities and Carla's family. The two main theories in this case are accident or murder. Peruvian police have haphazardly been working on both theories. While they think it's likely she had some kind of an accident at the park, they haven't found her body, saying possibly wild animals or leaves and ground cover naturally hit her. They also think it's possible that although it was an accident, someone in the park covered it up by either burying or moving her body. And there could be any number of reasons someone would do this. But when something happens to a tourist, it can hurt their revenue, so they'd want to sweep it under the rug. Another theory from the Peruvian police was that while she was near the entrance, someone took or lured her to one of the many ritual sites in the region where tourists try the sometimes deadly ayahuasca, that she is still in the village deep in experimentation with the drug. Or there was an accident while trying ayahuasca, she died, and her body was hidden. Her family heavily disputes the theory that she would have wanted to take drugs. They firmly believe she was sexually assaulted and kidnapped, or the victim of either human or organ trafficking. Maybe there was an opportunist that came across Carla the morning of December 12th, and he wanted to either sexually assault or rob her, and things went wrong. Either way, her family believes she is buried in the mountains of the Sacred Valley in Peru. While anyone hiking alone can have an accident, her family does not believe that's what happened. Her brother said, "It's very easy to believe, if you don't know my sister, that just because she was blind, she wasn't capable of hiking. I've hiked with her before. All her other senses are incredibly heightened. She has an incredible memory. She goes as far as to count her steps so she can retrace them. Her mind is always working, and she has an incredible sense of hearing." After all this time, the U.S. Embassy is finally starting to help, but Carla's family wants the FBI to open an international cooperation case, and they want the authorities in Peru to accept help from the U.S. government. Carla's family does not think they will see her again, and her family has dealt with that on a very personal level. As you can imagine, it's been extremely difficult. But they are absolutely not giving up and will forever do everything in their power to bring her home, regardless of what state she's in. And they want to pursue justice. One thing I want to talk about in regards to these cases I cover is that we often don't think about what families go through when a loved one goes missing or is murdered, especially when they're so far from home, in another country, another language, different police training, a different government, and laws to navigate. It's frustrating, draining, and exhausting for the families who just want to bring their loved one home. We often overlook the aftermath of the tragedy. What happens when the media dies down, but the families are still left without answers? Carla's father left his job and home in Texas and moved to Peru, searching 24 hours a day for her, waking up every morning before sunrise, praying that will be the day they find her. Carla's mom left Detroit because it was just too hard to be in her daughter's house without her. She moved to Brooklyn to live with Carla's brother and help take care of his wife and young child while he continuously goes to Peru to search for Carla. She had to go through Carla's possessions alone in preparation to sell her house and sleeps with a gray sweater Carla used to wear. Near her bed, she keeps a pocket-sized velvet picture frame with childhood photos of her children, missing Carla every minute of the day. I do this podcast to try and give victims a voice, and hope that someone somewhere will hear this and come forward with the needed puzzle piece to bring families closure, because living in that limbo of not knowing is no way to live. Is Peru safe to visit? Well, it does depend on what part of the country you're going to. The overall travel advisory from the U.S. Department of State is currently at level 2, increased caution. And this is due to crime, civil unrest, and the possibility of kidnapping. But the level of crime depends on where you go. There's a do not travel warning for the Colombian-Peruvian border area in the Laredo region, the valley of Apurimac, Ine, and Mantaro rivers, including areas within the departments of Ayacucho, Cusco, Huancavelica, and Yunnan, due to crime and terrorism. I would avoid those areas. Most recently, Peru is experiencing a major dengue fever outbreak, so you'll want to take precautions with mosquitoes, especially during the rainy season between December and March. There are no vaccinations or medications for dengue, so your best bet is to stay calm, keep your body cool and hydrated, and miserably wait it out. Altitude sickness is very real and can be deadly. Flying from Lima, which is at sea level, to Cusco and Machu Picchu, which is over 11,000 feet, can cause severe altitude sickness. Most people can acclimate in a few days, but some take longer and some can't acclimate at all. And the symptoms can be different in everyone. The most common is a headache. Some people feel unusually tired or fatigued. Others can feel dizzy or lightheaded, sometimes nausea and vomiting, loss of appetite, shortness of breath, or the more severe symptoms of confusion, hallucinations, difficulty walking, and loss of coordination. Altitude sickness is another reason hiking alone in Peru is not a good idea. If altitude sickness comes over you, you might need help to get to safety. Talking to people who are currently in Peru or have recently visited Peru say they don't feel unsafe, but took the necessary precautions they would in any South American country. Things like avoid any political protests or demonstrations, don't go out alone, especially at night, make sure you're traveling in licensed transportation, keep track of your belongings, and don't get too drunk or take drugs. There are some laws you might not be aware of in Peru. It's illegal to photograph infrastructure and military or police sites and personnel. Indecent behavior, including not showing respect at cultural, historical, or sacred sites, is against the law. It's also illegal to export antiques and artifacts from pre-colonial Peru. And you should carry photo identification on you at all times. Children traveling with only one parent must carry permission from the non-traveling parent to be able to depart Peru. And one last law that hopefully wouldn't pertain to any tourists, but I thought was interesting, is that in Peru, sexual relations with llama or alpaca is illegal. Unmarried young men are even prohibited from having a female llama or alpaca live in their homes. I would hate to think why that needed to be a law or who keeps those animals in their homes. I think the most important safety precaution for Peru, and I can't say this enough, is don't go hiking alone. It's fine if you solo travel, but get a guide or join a tour group. Anything can happen out there in the wild when you're alone, no matter how sure and experienced you are. Most importantly, no matter where you're traveling, make sure you inform someone about your plans before going anywhere. Tell someone reliable where you're going and what you'll be doing and when to expect you back. And my number one tip to staying alive on vacation is to pay attention to your gut. If something doesn't feel right, it isn't. Carla Valpeos went missing in Pisac, Peru on December 12, 2018. She was 35 years old, 5 feet 1 inches tall, with brown hair and brown eyes. She travels with a silver walking cane and was last seen carrying a green backpack. Please go online and look at a photo of Carla. She has distinctive features that you may remember if you saw her. If you have any information about her disappearance, please call the U.S. tip line in Michigan at 1-855-MICH-TIP or email c.valpeoz@gmail.com. And finally, remember to leave a review and rate this podcast 5 stars if you like the show, or hell, even if you don't. But either way, feel free to let me know what you think. Please follow The Last Trip on Instagram at The Last Trip Crime Pod and subscribe on Patreon to support the show. You'll get extra research, videos, photos, and updates, and even learn a little bit about my personal travels. That's patreon.com/thelasttrippodcast. I'm Jamie Beebe, bringing you your last trip and signing off until the next one. Thanks for listening.